BBC Radio Berkshire.
BBC Radio Berkshire, good morning. Peachy with you until 10 this morning. Let's talk tech for a little bit. I don't know whether you're trying to use FaceTime or Skype or Zoom or something like that to keep in touch with family members, maybe even family members who aren't normally au fait with this kind of technology. How is that going? What have you found works? Anything you want to know? 0808 100 5100. Gadget Detective Fezzy Turkalp is here. Morning, Fezzy.
Morning.
Good to have you on. First of all, news that people may have seen on the TV last night, that Apple and Google, the two tech giants, are working together. What are they doing?
Yeah, who'd have thunk it? Apple and Google working together. They've been working together for about 2 weeks now, and they announced it last night. Essentially, they're working together to produce software to go on Apple phones and anything running Android that will enable a form of sort of track and trace. And what it does is it uses a combination of GPS, location finding, and Bluetooth to work out how long people spend next to other people. And the idea is that if you opt into the service, and it's important to say it's an opt-in service, then you would get a notification if you were later found to have been in contact with someone who was later diagnosed as having a COVID-19 infection.
That's interesting. So they've been saying in recent days that maybe one route out of this lockdown, whenever that comes, might be weeks or months away, but when they start to release us back into something closer to normal life, the sort of contact tracing that was very important early on in all of this, when cases of coronavirus were very rare and they were keen to know every single person you'd come into contact with, we might get back to that kind of thing, and the tech might help with it.
Yeah, we might do, because you might get a notification sort of coming on your phone saying to self-isolate. I hope in time the notification would say get tested or self-isolate and then get tested, because you know self-isolation is a thing that's so destructive to the economy, but unfortunately at the same time very necessary. I guess what's particularly interesting about this is it not only does that, but it does it in a way which Apple and Google claim to be anonymous. The matching is done on the phones, not on the central database, and the information that's held centrally is anonymized. Now, whether there is a way of de-anonymizing that, that's another question. So initially, this is an app, but in time, the intention is to build it in to the Android and iOS operating systems. And the benefit of that is that it doesn't rely then on people downloading an app. They only have to choose to opt in or not. And then it can be used also by the producers of other apps for the underlying technology. It's a bit like, the operating system has software in it that enables GPSs to work. They're able to access the GPS chip. In the same way, this would be able to access this underlying code. It's what's called an API. It's a block of code that's then accessible to the producers of other apps. And all these other apps will continue to exist in this country and in other countries and provide different functionality.
Interesting. Similar sort of idea for a different purpose. There's obviously a lot of concern that people will not be able to bring themselves to stay in, bearing in mind it's Easter and it's going to be sunny. And yeah. Google's put out a load of data, again, using the sort of tracking technology in its devices to show how well we were doing last weekend with this.
Yeah. So they claim that the data is anonymized, and it enables them to by geographic location to see how well or not we are doing with keeping to the rules that have been set. And it can tell if we went out, how many times we went out, if we went out to buy groceries, by virtue of where we went and where we spent time. So these techniques have already been used in China and South Korea and other countries as well. Typically, the countries that have fewer protections on civil liberties, the fact is that they've had this infrastructure in place for a long time and no doubt have been using it. So you can also use this type of technology not only to provide anonymized statistical data, but you could also use it to enforce quarantine. You might start having.
Of course, you could. Yes, I haven't really thought of taking it to that extent, but you could use it for that purpose. Because once the information exists, then the authorities can do something with it if they choose.
Yeah. So the question is, would the authorities want to stop at an anonymized warning, so they could warn somebody without actually knowing who that person is by virtue of this handset and this anonymized digital ID is breaking quarantine and is going out several times a day and doesn't appear to be going to work or to the same place. So a little bit of, you know, analysis of the data would tell them that. Or they could do it in such a way that people get fined and even in time arrested if they were persistent. So, you know, there are a range of options. Apple and Google have been very clear that what they're providing is not that and is anonymous, but there's nothing to stop the states, various countries or app producers on behalf of countries from adding in that functionality should they choose to.
Stay with us, Fevzi, if you wouldn't mind. So that's some of the big breaking tech news of how technology companies are getting involved in the battle against coronavirus. Next, how are you doing with tech at home? What do you find works in terms of enabling you to work from home? What works in terms of keeping in touch with friends and family? Do you have a question for Fevzi this morning? If you have, we'll get to stuck into this home connectivity side of things in a sec.
Berkshire News and Berkshire Stories.
The Andrew Peat Show.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
Fevzi Turkap, our tech expert, our gadget detective, is on the line this morning. Ben in Maidenhead says, I'm trying to organise a virtual pub quiz with friends over the weekend. What's the best app to use to host it?
That's a good question. Well, there's a lot of options, assuming that you need a number of people connected all at the same time with video, in essence, group chat. You could use House Party, which is a third-party app that you can download free of charge. You could use Zoom. So Zoom is something that was used mainly by business up to the outbreak of the coronavirus as a as an app that allows you to do video calling, but a lot more. So you could, for example, use Zoom to speak to a whole, you know, hundreds of people. You could do webinars over it and things like that. So it's certainly up to dealing with a pub quiz. For other apps like Skype and FaceTime and so forth, they also have the ability to connect several people with video links at the same time, but some of them require more recent devices. So something like Zoom might be a better solution. Plus, the benefit of House Party is that when two or more people go online and start talking to each other, others that they know get an invitation to pile in unless you actually close the group off.
Oh, that's interesting. So it becomes a bit more open-ended.
Yeah, it is a bit like a house party and people like texting each other saying, oh, there's a party here and other people coming along. But that messaging is going out automatically. So bear in mind, all of these things have some privacy concerns. Some of them have some bugs in it, you know, so in their software. So, you know, just be aware of that. Zoom in particular has had quite a lot of profile over some bugs in its software recently.
Yeah, Holly, actually the question about this from Holly, who says that we're using Zoom for work meetings at home, but I'm hearing on the news it's had some privacy problems. Is this something I should be worried about? Should we be using something else, basically?
I think the problem with Zoom is it went from a very small user base because it was a business tool to a huge one, and it got a lot more scrutiny, and therefore it was found that there were a number of failings. You know, it's a question of whose bugs do you want to accept. Arguably, Zoom will go through a process where it will become more secure than it is now, because now it's hit the big time in terms of the number of users. So I think that there are issues there. I mean, in terms of trust, my own trust for Apple users, at least, would go to FaceTime, which is an Apple equivalent, if you like, built into all Apple devices, be they iPhones, iPads, or Apple Macs. But the problem is it's Apple only. If you go to WhatsApp or Facebook Messenger, then they're owned by Facebook, and we know how Facebook makes its money, and therefore, if not through bugs but through design, you'll be giving up a lot of privacy. Similarly with Skype used to be independent, now owned by Microsoft. And you have to think that, that Microsoft is collecting data on you. So it's really a question of who you want to spy on you, frankly. Mm. I wouldn't worry too much about House Party. If I was worried, I might stick it on a tablet, you know, maybe something that isn't my main device, maybe doesn't have quite as much data on it. But, you know, the bugs on Zoom are well publicized. And it's hard to say exactly in what time frame they'll be fixed. I'm sure they will be. But it's difficult now for them to work on. I mean, what Zoom have said is they're stopping work on new features immediately. And instead, their programmers are working on fixing the bugs. So maybe, you know, if you're concerned, particularly concerned, you may stay away from that for a while. If FaceTime is an option, I think that's the best option. The other way of doing this sort of communication between people is to use a device which is not a tablet, a smartphone, or a computer, but one of these all-in-one devices. So Google do one called the Nest Hub Max. It's an all-in-one device, 10-inch screen, camera, microphone built in, much easier to use and in some ways more flexible. Those devices, they're particularly good for older people and people who are not tech savvy. Some older people are very tech savvy, but you know, making the cliched assumption that older people can't use tech, which is of course not always true, it can be a good thing, because with that you can actually set them up where you can drop in on a person without them actually having to answer a call. So if you've got
interesting.
If you've got a person who's very vulnerable, maybe has a disability, maybe has dementia, this device, the camera in it, is essentially what's called a Nest Cam. It's the same sort of camera that's used in home security systems. And what it means is that, you know, you position it in the right place, you can get a view of the room, your view of your loved one, make sure they haven't fallen over, and drop in maybe at a, you know, pre-agreed time every day, and just have a chat with them, and you'll just pop up your face
without them needing to do anything. That's the point, isn't it?
Exactly. And that's, again, that's an opt-in from their side, and whoever sets it up for that person could.
Is it simple to do a similar sort of thing to what you're describing now, but to drop in and have conversation with someone you care about who perhaps isn't tech savvy using your Alexa speakers? Is that a simple thing to set up?
Yeah, so you can do that, and bear in mind that there's a range of Alexa Echo speakers which are called the Show range, and anything called an Echo Show has all the features of an Amazon Echo unit, but it has a screen built in as well, and can also be used for video calling. In fact, they can support Skype calls over the Amazon Echoes now. And again, you can set them up to auto answer. So, and you can do that with Skype on your tablet as well. So, you know, it can auto answer, and you can pop in. So a lot of the kit we have is already up to the task. I guess it's just that, you know, holding a tablet or a smartphone is not always ideal. So that's why sometimes these sort of Google Nest Hub Max or the Echo Shows come into their own, because they're effectively got a built-in stand, and they sit on a table next to you, or a desktop, or wherever you want it, and they have all this additional functionality. And then you can use them to access things like, so for example, with the Google device, you can access YouTube, which Google own, but you can do it by voice. You can do voice searches on it, which is, again, really good if someone's eyesight's not too good, to tap on an on-screen keyboard or something like that. You can just say, you know, play me Elvis, and up comes a bunch of Elvis or whatever it is that one wants, or an exercise video. So there's a lot that can be done. And the reason I quite like those devices is because they're not as daunting as giving someone a smartphone or a tablet who isn't used to using one of those. You know, there's a lot more that needs to be done, and they don't need charging either, because they're mains powered devices.
Interesting.
That's another thing. So it's kind of horses for courses. There's a lot of options out there, but the good news is most of us already own the equipment that we need to do this one way or another. We just have to work out what software. Oh, and by the way, harking back to the earlier questions, it's not just about what hardware you're running. What software and what hardware are other people running? So, for example, if they're not using Apple Kit, then FaceTime is out. But if they are, then it's great, because it's already built in. So you've got to think about who it is you're trying to communicate with as well, and what they have access to, what they can run on their device.
Interesting. Darren's been on from Winnersh. Our Wi-Fi is poor, so the audio on Skype calls isn't very good. If your priority here is to get the best quality, so it's ease of communication that way rather than worrying too much about the security or the fancy features, what would you go for then?
Well, so if the Wi-Fi is poor, that will undermine the function of any of these apps, because don't forget, these apps scale their quality according to the data flow that's available. So if they notice that, even on a good Wi-Fi, sometimes it dips. And when it dips, instead of trying to present full quality audio and or video, they sort of step down the quality to maintain the integrity of the call, so the call doesn't drop. So instead, I would focus on what can be done to improve your Wi-Fi. And that would help you potentially in a number of ways. So first of all, there may be interference of that Wi-Fi from others, your neighbours, or indeed from yourself. Certain devices are notorious for interfering with Wi-Fi. So make sure, for example, if you've got a cordless phone base or a baby monitor or anything, don't have any of that equipment near the Wi-Fi router. That's the thing that disseminates the Wi-Fi around your home, that normally has a couple of aerials sticking out of it that look like fingers. So don't have anything near there. Be aware that these devices can interfere, and consider turning off any devices that you don't need that can broadcast. So that would include baby monitors. I wouldn't recommend switching off your decked phone, your cordless phone, for obvious reasons. Microwave ovens, funnily enough, if you've, you know, that should only cause an intermittent problem unless you're running the microwave all day. But microwave ovens are notorious for producing electromagnetic frequencies that interfere. Now, if the interference comes from your neighbor's Wi-Fi, there's something else you can do. You can go into the settings on the router, and you do that by attaching a device directly to the router and going onto the settings page inside a web browser, and you can switch channels. Wi-Fi has channels that are effectively slightly different frequencies, and therefore, by flipping channels, and you can try one by one and see if that improves things, because you can maybe just move to a channel that's in the clear, that's not being interfered with.
And sometimes what you can do as well, you can abandon the Wi-Fi aspect of it and plug things directly into the router. It's not the most convenient thing to do, but we've done this at home actually, to set up a little sort of radio studio thing that I need for some of my work in the house. And as soon as you start cabling things into the router, the connectivity is a whole load better.
Yeah, because then you're bypassing the Wi-Fi altogether. So anything that's mission critical, like, you know, broadcasting, for example, you would certainly want to do that. The problem is that that becomes a lot more difficult with a device like a smartphone or a tablet. You'd have to have various dongles that would allow that. But it could be done, but not as freeing. So, yeah, by all means, you know, you can do that. The other thing is, it could be a question of range, that the Wi-Fi in a particular part of your home is not great because the router is at one end of the house and your bedroom or wherever you want to access it is at the other, and the construction of your house sort of doesn't allow that. Now, if that's the case, you can do a number of things. You can buy little boosters that sit halfway between you and the router, and it's effectively, you know, they pick up the weak signal, but not too weak for it to be intelligible, boost it and send it on again. So it gets a sort of mid broadcast boosts. And you can use devices like that. There are all sorts of devices that can improve the Wi-Fi in your home. If you want to get really sophisticated and spend some money, there's something called mesh, where mesh is like a group of devices around your home, 2, 3, 4, depending on the size of your home, and those intelligently work together to give you the optimal Wi-Fi signal at each point in your home. So those are quite clever as well.
Fevzi, thank you so much. That's Fevzi Turkart with tech advice to get you through coronavirus.